Save all your kisses for me, your kisses for me. Waterloo, Waterloo. Bing, bing, a bang, bong, bing, bang, bong, bing, bang, bong. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Eurovision James Whale Radio Show. Right, welcome to the program. Nice to have you with us today, James Whale and the James Whale Radio Show live. Well, live now, but probably when you hear it, it will have been fiddled around with. Well, might have been fiddled around with. So anyway, a guest on the show later, Daryl Eastley, is a mate of mine, and he's a music journalist. He's very knowledgeable about music, and I wanted to talk to him about Eurovision. Because, you know, they've decided they're going to do Eurovision differently to try and make more of us interested, more of us involved. And who knows? We might even win Eurovision. So, mind you, having said that, I'll probably talk to him about loads of other stuff as well. Robbo's here, there, everywhere. Where are you, Rob?
I'm here. I'm not in Bristol.
Why would I think you're in Bristol?
Everyone thinks I'm in Bristol.
Okay, well, let's make it clear. Rob's not in Bristol, all right? Rob, as far as I know, Rob has never been to Bristol.
That's actually true. I've never been to Bristol.
I, on the other hand, have been to Bristol, and it's a very nice place. And may I say hello to all those people, all those Bristolians. Hello, Bristolian. Well, that's not a very good Bristol. Brussels. Yeah, welcome to Brussels.
Brussels?
How do we get on to Brussels? No, Brussels. That's a Brussels accent for Brussels.
Okay. You're not convinced.
Yeah. No. Okay. Now, we started this new thing with, the James Whale's phone box. You go onto the website, you can leave messages, and it's not really working. So we'll have to have a look at that. And if you did leave a message, you will need to go and do it again because it's just not worked. So we'll try. What I thought would be quite fun, if you want to be on the two things, you can email me, jamesworldradio@gmail.com, and be part of the program, as lots of you do. But we've set up this kind of phone box or answer phone where you can record what you want to say or a message. But it doesn't seem to work. So Rob's going to sort that out, aren't you?
Yeah, it's something to do. It's just complicated. It should have worked, but it worked last week.
Yeah. In fact, we did play the ones last week, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
It's such a long time since last week, I can't remember, yeah. So we'll sort that out, but if you did do it again next week. I'll give you the number later. We broadcast all over the universe. In fact, I wanted just to say a few words before we start. Hello to those people in the Middle East. Seem to have quite a lot of listeners in the Middle East at the moment. And America, all over the world, lovely to have you with us. Australia, the Antipodean Islands, where are they?
I've no idea. I didn't even know such things existed.
All right. Okay. Anyway, all over the place. Thank you very much indeed. So whether you listen through a radio station that puts this program out, or whether you listen just, you know, you can just go on my Twitter at the James Whale or James Whale Radio, and you can just link to any of the programs, can't you?
Indeed, indeed.
You can be sitting on the bus or the train or doing a bit of jogging, and you can get your phone and you can go to the James Whale, and you can go into jamesworldradio.co.uk, and you can choose any program you want.
Just don't laugh too loud, because it'll look strange.
Yeah, it'll look bloody stupid, to be honest. So what was I talking about? Mars. So did you see that, Rob? They've discovered water on Mars.
In a tap.
No, don't be facetious. No. They have found that there is liquid something or other at certain times of the year pouring down a mountainside on Mars.
That means there's oxygen on Mars.
Well, there could well be. Now, I have a theory. Would you like me to expound my theory? And I don't think a lot of the so-called serious, sensible people have been prepared to come out and say this. But Mars is bigger than Earth, isn't it?
Mars is bigger than Earth, yes.
And they say that there's obviously evidence that there used to be oceans on Mars and that they've got what looked like dried up riverbeds. Now they're finding out that there is water coming out of the interior and melting ice turning into... I think, and this is my theory, okay, and it'll upset lots of people because, you know, I just think it will. My theory is this, that we, mankind, started out on Mars.
Right. How did we get to Earth then?
Well, no. I mean, Mars, I think, used to be just like this planet, right? It yeah. used to be, you know, a green planet with oceans and rivers and probably humanoids more advanced than we are today. And back how many billions of years ago, suddenly their planet began, like planets do, to die.
Got too close to the sun.
I don't know. I don't know. Why is Mars dead? I'm not sure. Why is it like it is now? I don't know. But something happened, and Mars began to become uninhabitable. And it must perhaps have been a gradual thing, and they probably then decided that they needed to find a planet that was similar to this one, and they found Earth, which, of course, was not far away. So anyway, I reckon the beings similar to us, humans, if you prefer to use that term, eventually found a way of getting here to Earth, a planet fairly close to them that could handle human life. And that, my friends, it was already inhabited by various species, Neanderthal and so on and so forth. That's why there is a missing link. Because we actually, humans, originated on Mars. What do you think?
It's all very plausible. Maybe they had a big water slide coming from Mars to Earth, and that's why there's no water left.
Now, you're being stupid. Don't be stupid. I think that is actually a very interesting theory and one that should be explored, and I'll bet you some people are. But it would then throw into confusion the religions of the world, because all the religions of the world that started in other ways would say, "Oh, hang on, how do we sort this out?" You know, some religions reckon that this planet's only been inhabited for 6,000 years or something. There are religions that people take seriously that decry the dinosaurs. Oh, well, they never existed.
I've got another theory.
Go on.
You know, when you're building a house, sometimes you have like one of them porta cabins that all the builders go in.
Yeah.
Maybe they used Mars as the base for like the builders, and then they flew to planet Earth, constructed Earth.
Well, I interviewed somebody who said that the moon had actually been built because the moon happens to be exactly the right distance from the sun and exactly the right size for us to exist. And if the moon wasn't where it is, we wouldn't exist.
So we built the moon as well.
People from our future who came back built the moon.
Right.
I think we should move on. This is beginning to hurt my mind too much. All right.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's talk about Jeremy Corbyn. He did the big speech, and it was quite interesting. He didn't really touch much on nuclear weapons, did he?
Did he not?
Not really. Oh, you obviously didn't watch it, did you? Why I have a producer who's not interested in what goes on in the world, I have no idea. But I thought it was interesting. I thought, talking to younger people about Corbyn, they're obviously, lots of younger people are inspired by what he's saying. Lots of the older ones, "Oh, no, no, it's all we drive." Blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the one thing about Corbyn is he actually appears to be an ordinary bloke. And if he can make politics more understanding, i.e., that, you know, one side usually slags off the other side, then the other side slags them off, which I like. Don't get me wrong. Prime Minister's Question Time without a good old punch-up would be really dull. But usually when you talk to a leader of a party, they will just be completely rude about everything the person on the opposition side says. Now, I wonder if Corbyn can carry on and just not allow himself to get drawn in to a war of words with Cameron, And if he can, will Cameron and the Tories then realise that they'll just look like bullies if they keep on having a go at him when he doesn't retaliate? So it might well be a complete change in the way we do politics in this country. Could be interesting.
If you say so.
Yeah, you see, I knew I'd leave a gap there, and I knew that you wouldn't be able to come back because, you know, your mind doesn't work that way. Anyway, luckily, I put it out on Facebook, so we can actually talk to some real people, not just Rob, who, let's face it, I mean, Rob, he's a grease monkey. You know, he sits there, he fiddles around with buttons and things, and that's what he does. You don't like people, really, do you? You prefer machines.
Yeah, the first bit was wrong, but the second bit was right.
Good. Okay. Right. Daniel says the reality is they are here and will stay here. Let's talk about nuclear weapons. They are a deterrent, and it's wise to be up to date on the tech. Do you know, talking about nuclear weapons, we've got nuclear weapons. They are here. But what's the point? When are we going to use them? We've been attacked by terrorists in our own country. We've had people have their heads chopped off on video. We've had some appalling attacks. When are we, you know, Daniel, what is the point of nuclear weapons? If the Russians were going to try and invade us, would we really, would the world be worth living in if anybody wanted a nuclear war? Would it really be worth it? I mean, what is the point in spending all that money on a new nuclear deterrent that we're not going to use? Is there a reason, I'm asking? Simon Lucas says, my issue with socialism is that it doesn't take adequate account of the forces of human nature. Sometimes a projection of power and aggression is a means to avoiding conflict. I think Trident should remain. Interesting. See it all. Ken Brown says it's an insurance policy. Gary Moss says a deterrent to some, a target make it to others. If we didn't have them, why would anyone nuke us? Now, Gary, it's an interesting point, not discussed very often. Rob Atkinson said, if we ever needed to use it, we'd be dead already. Interesting point too. Dean Ashby says, nuclear means power. It keeps you at the top of the food chain, on the top table with the likes of Russia and the USA. Kevin Tapow says, one of the big threats to humanity remains nuclear weapons and the proliferation of them. They give us a false sense of security, as once you use them, you have effectively lost. It's an expensive white elephant that will never be used, because if we ever do use them, then we have all effectively lost. Nuclear weapons will not protect us from terrorists with AK-47s and homemade bombs or chemical weapons, for that matter. And Darren Blunt says about Jeremy Corbyn, great speech by a future prime minister. I'm not sure many people would agree with that, but there we are. That's what he says. Interesting. I'm not sure where I stand on that, but I just don't see anybody. Well, the Americans have used the nuclear weapons. They used them once. They've never used them again. The nuclear weapons that we have today are so much more powerful than the nuclear weapons that we had then. Using one now may well, you know, we talk about fracking, and I'm not very up on this. We talk about fracking destabilizing the planet. We talk about fracking destabilizing the planet. What would nuclear war do? It could shift us off our axis. It could change the weather forever. Never mind about global warming or climate change. You use a nuclear weapon. You indulge in nuclear war anywhere in the planet. Wouldn't that actually just... that would be it, wouldn't it, really?
Why do we keep spending money on this? What happens to all the old stuff?
Well, we don't know, do we, really? They say, oh, well, it's past its shelf life now. It must have gone off, so we have to get new ones.
But I thought that these half-lives and things, they're talking about hundreds of years.
Well, no, they talk about hundreds of years after they're finished and trying to get rid of the depleted uranium, isn't it? And you have to store it, and it might be a 1,000 years before it becomes... I don't know. It's the same with nuclear power, isn't it?
I'm confused. Again.
Me too. You want to have a say on this, by the way. It'd be fascinating to hear your thoughts. You can, of course, email jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. Shall we try the number again? Call us. Go to our phone line and call us on 0117 230 1771. or I could do it 0117 230 1771. That's a bit confusing, isn't it?
Yeah, or 0117 230 1771.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we could do it all those ways, couldn't you, really? Right, shall we have a bit of music, or shall we talk to my mate Daryl first?
Let's do Daryl, because he's waiting on the other line. I'll put him through after this.
Sitting in my room and I'm on my own. It's cold outside and I'm feeling alone. So I turn that dial and my radio's on. I hear James Whale and my troubles are gone. I hear James Whale on the radio. I hear James Whale and his podcast show. I hear James Whale on the radio.
Daryl, who I love to call Daryl Esler, but actually it's not Daryl's name. Daryl's name is Daryl Eastley. Well known to those music fans for some of his insight into the world of music. Do you think I'm overdoing it here, Daryl, slightly or not?
No, if anything, I think you're slightly underdoing it. Yes, I am known for that, for writing. Been published now for about the past 15 years, but before then I worked in record shops. Music has been my life. I've been very fortunate in being able to make a living out of my hobby.
When did you first, I mean, because you're not, as far as I know, you're not a musician, are you?
No, I mean, I'm a bad one. I had, you know, the teenage band and the band into the early 20s that broke up on stage with a fight, which was brilliant, you know. But, you know, I could have been a musician were it not for my absolute lack of ability in that area. But fortunately, I know a lot of people who are good musicians, and I know a good tune when I hear one.
When did you first realise that popular music was going to become as important to the 20th and the 21st century as it has become? Because until probably the 60s, music didn't have the control of culture that it has today, does it?
No, I think you're right. And I mean, I think, you know, one has always to mention the Beatles, because, and Elvis before it, but the revolution that the Beatles brought to this country, and I grew up sort of slightly after. I was born in 66. But my father had been the policeman on duty that had got the Beatles into Southend Odeon when they played in Essex. And my mother ran a record shop and she sold the records. And they sort of saw Beatlemania sort of firsthand. And one of the first memories I had was seeing the Beatles on Top of the Pops doing Let It Be, and actually buying that when I was four, which now sounds almost like made up or incredibly precocious, but it's absolutely true. Four going into five, because I thought it was tremendous. And I think what they did on the personal level for me was, I couldn't believe it was their haircuts. I mean, it really was. I couldn't believe how they looked so different. You saw these pictures of the sort of Hard Day's Night boys, and then you suddenly saw these hippies. And it was like trying to actually work that out. So there was like a puzzle which got my child's mind going. But I think in the whole sort of social context, you know, they showed that pop music was more than just holding hands, if you like, to paraphrase one of their songs.
Why do you think, I mean, Elvis Presley was huge. He was the kind of start of rock and roll. When rock and roll, you know, there were radio stations in America that said it was the devil's music. They would never play it. And anybody that listened to that kind of music was evil. Yet that music, all our popular music came out of jazz, I suppose, and gospel, didn't it? And it came from people who'd struggled and had very difficult lives.
Absolutely. And I think the potency of, you know, you have to look at America at that time, and obviously millions of things have been written about it, and I've written about it and everything, but, you know, the impact of the white man and the white Southern man, you know, and what the South's supposed to do, you know, slavery, et cetera, singing African-American music, and obviously popularized it because it was phenomenal. And you had the, you know, people who wouldn't listen to Big Joe Turner or, you know, Fats Domino, etc., but they'd listen to Elvis. And I think a lot of the fear that came up in America was this fact that, you know, African Americans were coming in via the back door. You heard it over here, you know, that translation of how that must have sounded when you know, we had big bands and, you know, Uncle Mac and stuff like that. And you heard Mystery Train by Elvis and Heartbreak Hotel. I mean, you must remember that yourself, maybe a little, you know, obviously much younger than that. But you know what I mean? With that first time you heard those sounds, it's like, wow. So you can see how the Lennons and the Richards and things like that were listening, thinking, good Lord, this is different.
Well, yeah, I mean, the interesting thing was popular music, if you like, was sort of Frank Sinatra, Perry Como, the big bands and all of that. And then suddenly people took off their ties, undid their shirts and relaxed.
Definitely. And I mean, I think, you know, people are always saying, where's the new Beatles? Where's the new Elvis? Well, they're out there now. They're just happening, but we can't see them because so many things are happening. And, you know, how do you get heard above the noise? That intrigues me the whole time now, because there's brilliant stuff I hear all the time, but you know, they have their, you know, their Facebook account or their website, and you know, they've got 1,000 devoted people that love what they do. But how do you get beyond that? I mean, then if you could break through into, certainly in the UK, you know, two/three channels, you know, the radio, a commercial radio, if you sort of made it, you already had this enormous audience, you know, which was just there. Now everything is so fractured. And I think it's, you know, fascinating the time that allowed those characters to come through in the way they did.
Is it true that we the music we all love is that what the record or what the program planners, the people who plan what music radio stations should play, They go for the music of what they call the music of your life, which is the music that you usually heard in your formative years, your late teens and early 20s. And that is the sort of music that most people always hark back to through their lives.
Any form of music reaching the public is always a sort of, you know, there's a lot of people that put their fingerprints on it before it gets out. You know, you start with the original songwriter and then, you know, bands, producers, record companies, marketeers, DJs, etc., make it all happen. And of course, people like radio programmers have a tremendous amount of power in what you hear. I think there's two things. One, now, you know, with the internet and social media, people can go directly to their fans, and that can be heard. So I think that's one thing. But the thing about the soundtrack of your life, I think, is very important, because, you know, why I love music so much and why I can have a conversation with people. I can be anywhere in the world and have a conversation about music. And you don't have to know who the bass player was on the second Neil Young album or anything like that, but you know you've got two or three songs that really mean something to you. And that immediacy of the art, if you like, it's like you're straight in and you're there. It's not like a book, you know, you have to get involved, a film you have to give over, you know, a period of time. You know, you can hear the opening bars of, I don't know, Bridge Over Troubled Water or Blue Moon or, you know, insert tune here, and you're immediately there. And of course, it makes for great radio. You think a great way to keep your listeners happy is to put one of those classics on. But what I do think is that people, you know, there's all this thing, oh, no, there's nothing out there in modern music, you know, there's nothing for me. Actually, there is. But you've just got to sort of open your mind a little bit and have a listen.
But this whole thing always makes me laugh. I mean, I don't play so much music on the radio, Daryl, now, as you know. I just rab it on and on and on. But I started sort of in the late 60s playing records in clubs, and then in the 70s I got onto the radio and playing music. And it's always been the same. Old people have always said, you know, the music's not as good as it was when I was young. And now I'm old, and there's a tendency for me to say, you know, I love a bit of AC/DC, I love Motown and soul. I like all kinds of music, but, you know, it was much better then than it is now. And I'll talk to my kids or even my grandchildren, and they'll say, hey, you know, what are you talking about? One Direction, they're brilliant. They're brilliant. Oh, there's a, you know, Ed Sheeran is amazing. He's fabulous. And there are loads of people. Leona Lewis, she's got the most fantastic, soulful voice you've ever heard. And they're right, aren't they?
Well, they are. Of course they are. And every generation needs their One Direction. We spoke last week of the Bay City Rollers coming back. And, you know, the 60s had the Beatles and the Monkees. The 70s had the Bay City Rollers. You know, the 80s had Duran Duran. The 90s had Take That. What was the noughties? Westlife. I don't know. You know, and now One Direction. It's sort of, there is that need for that niche to be filled, because there's always going to be teenage girls who want to party. And there's always going to be sort of teenage boys who are going to want to have a sort of a madness or something like that. I'm not just sort of saying, you know, boys must like this and girls must like this. Of course, it crosses all boundaries. You know, it's interesting. I just an aside, I was on the tube last night and the One Direction had played at the O2. And there was a sort of elderly, you know, father with his teenage daughter. And he'd obviously chaperoned her to the One Direction concert. And they were in such a beautiful animated conversation, reminiscing about the concert together. And I just thought, oh, do you know what? You know, life's not so bad. The divides you put in about music and what's good or bad are just, I don't know, you know, Duke Ellington said there's only two sorts of music, good or bad. You know, just love it. I think a good tune is a good tune, whoever does it.
But I think, you know, you can see a band in a pub and you can be moved by that music. I often wonder why some people make it and some people don't. I have a friend called Peter Straker, who is a brilliant singer. He was one of the originals in Hair. And Peter never quite made it to the big time, but he has got the most amazing stage presence and the most amazing voice. But for one reason, he didn't make it and other people did.
No, it's true, and pop is littered with that. And I know Peter's work and things. And I mean, you know, as a kid, I remember him on telly at the same time as Tom Jones. You know, Engelbert Humperdinck and Tony Christian—they were all sort of interchangeable to sort of a young viewer. But I don't know. It is that mixture. And I think if people really knew that, you know, people have been trying to sort of write books about it and have theories about it all over the years. And I think there's a TV program called The X Factor. But, I mean, I think it is almost that sort of the X Factor, why someone does ultimately make it and stay made. I mean, obviously, sometimes they have a spectacular fall from grace, which finishes them off. But other times it's through sort of no fault of their own and tastes change and the world moves on.
Let's talk about The X Factor. Loads of people, very pompous in my view, look down their noses on The X Factor. I love The X Factor. I think it's great. And I can see lots of talent that doesn't get anywhere that might get somewhere in the future. But it shows you, doesn't it, just how many talented people there are. Talent isn't enough to make it in the music world.
Well, no. I mean, you know, coming back to your thing about, you know, pub bands. I mean, I see a lot of fantastic pub bands, but they don't have that extra dimension. And it's funny because I have a 10-year-old daughter who's obsessed with The X Factor, and we watch it every week. And, you know, my only criticism about it now, I think it's almost run its course in a way. I think it should be rested for a few seasons, because I think it maybe is getting a bit too formulaic. But I mean, I've been in music and writing about music for 40 years or 35 years or whatever. And I saw something the other night. I thought, she's absolutely brilliant. And she went out. You know, both me and my wife just went, oh, no, that's a voice. But they all didn't like her. And it's like, okay, well, the old cliche of one man's meat is another man's poison, etc. I mean, I think, you know, you see it's not just having a fabulous voice. It's having the package. It's having the persona. And also, you know, someone who can be moulded. And there's a guy, his name's Shay, with he's got his little goatee and his backward baseball cap and his wiry glasses. And he's got one of the best voices you've heard at all. And you know, 6 months down the line, he's going to look like Ricky Martin or someone and you know, be fully groomed and be in the charts. I sincerely hope so, because it's wonderful to hear a voice like that.
you're right. He doesn't look like he sounds, and they will change that because it is important that you look, if you like, in a certain way. But he has got a brilliant voice. Is it easier nowadays to succeed in music that you can go on the internet, you can sort of play your stuff, you can get it heard by a bigger audience? Is it actually easier now than it used to be?
It's exceptionally easy to get out there. You know, I could make a record. Well, yeah, I could do that. I mean, on an iPad GarageBand, you know, Mike Oldfield made the whole of Tubular Bells on something that wasn't as advanced as that. You know, so you could make a record and you could upload your video and it's out there. But it's out there with, you know, 30 million other things that are quite similar. So it's still connecting that to the right people. It doesn't necessarily mean in this day and age that right people has to be, you know, the record company mogul. Because there's other ways, you know, sync deals with films or get onto an advert. But again, you have to get it in front of those people to be heard.
Let's finish off with the Eurovision Song Contest, all right?
Aha. We're voting for it now, aren't we? Isn't that what's happened?
Well, I don't know. They're going to redo it and they're going to make it so almost anybody can, you know, if you're over 18 and, you can vote for who you think should do it and anybody can come up with a song. And it seems to me to be a total and utter waste of time. I quite like the spectacle of it and the campness of it. But, hey, we're never going to win the Eurovision Song Contest because all the Eastern European countries stick together.
I always watch it each year, and I sort of live in hope. You remember that old Peanuts cartoon with Charlie Brown and his friend Lucy, and she puts the football down for him to kick. And every time he goes to kick it, she removes it, pulls it out of his way, and he falls on his back. But he always keeps trying. And I always watch it each year, knowing we're never going to win anymore. But I still think, well, maybe, just maybe. It's great fun. It's a bit of sport. It's part of the tapestry. If we won it, I mean, I don't know what it would mean if we won it again. I don't know. What, apart from becoming a future statistic and a greatest hit, it's part of the pleasure is just absorbing into the whole spectacle.
I mean, look at the stuff that's won. Apart from ABBA, and ABBA at the time were not considered to be the great musicians that they are now.
No.
But, you know, some of the other stuff we have won with, I mean, please.
It's funny because a few years ago there was a package tour called The Best of British, and I took my mother-in-law to it. It came to a venue in Southend called Cliffs Pavilion, which is like a, you know, the classic sort of seaside venue. And on the bill, there was the Crankies and Frank Carson and Cannonball, but they had Brotherhood of Man. And they, you know, they had a considerable amount of hits aside from Save All Your Kisses for Me. And then their set ended with, you know, it went dark and they read out, you know, they had the tape recording of them winning the contest and they came out and sang it. And I thought, wouldn't it be, you know, in a parallel universe that the Brotherhood of Man had become ABBA? And ABBA was sort of like in a seaside resort in Sweden somewhere, sort of still singing Waterloo to, you know, a crowd of a couple of thousand. I mean, some of those records were all right. But, I mean, you know, congratulations, Boom Bang A Bang. I mean, they've always been with Puppet on a String. I mean, they've been what they've been. I mean, Making Your Mind Up, I'd still, you know, raise a slight cap to that one. I'm sure you would too.
Okay, what are you up to? You're still running the discos for the older person, aren't you?
We do, yes, middle-aged spread, which is something we do in Leon C, but we travel as well. But grown-up disco for those unafraid to dance, which is now in its fifth year. And honestly, it's such a lovely atmosphere because it's just everyone has such a lovely time. You know, there's no, you know, there's not grab a granny, there's no, you know, people leave all their cares at the door and just connect. You know, what we said earlier about connecting with a tune, and it might be someone hearing, I don't know, The Prodigy Out of Space, or Desmond Dekker, The Israelites, or Sly and the Family Stone, Dance to the Music, or, you know, even something from the charts now, you know, and it's just like, oh, isn't this great? Because I think most people really do love a little dance here and there. Good for the soul.
Yeah, well, look, you know, all those people who are in their 70s and even their 80s now, 40, 50 years ago, they were actually in the discos and dancing to pop music that we would consider to be fairly modern today.
Oh, absolutely. And you look at an audience now, and I mean, not middle-aged spread, but you go to gigs and things, and you start to realise that, you know, all of our heroes are reaching an age where they're going to start going naturally. You know, they're in their 70s, they're in their mid-70s, and in the next 20 years, a lot of things will change. I mean, Brian Ferry was 70 this weekend. I mean, Brian Ferry, the eternal sort of 28-year-old with that sloppy fringe. Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, dear. You're making me feel young, Daryl. That's the good thing. Listen, if the Stones can get out and be absolutely on it at their age, mid-70s, then there's hope for all of us.
Absolutely. And I say about Brian, he's in the middle of a world tour. I mean, they're not, you know, it's all, the rules are different. You know, when I was a kid, 70 was almost bedbound, you know, and now, you know, 80 is the new 40 or whatever. I mean, Giorgio Moroder, you know, the man who produced I Feel Love, Donna Summer and Chicory Tip, Son of My Father and all that. I mean, he is 74 and he's just done a record called 74 is the new 24. And he's appearing in Coco in Camden in a couple of weeks' time, which is like, you know, a youth venue. So, look, you know, I think age is nothing but a number, and other great cliches.
Well, I'm quite pally with Lee John, Imagination, Body Talk, all of that. He's appearing at the Jazz Cafe in London on the 16th of October. And I think we should go.
He is always a brilliant turn. Solid gold entertainment.
Mm. Daryl, listen, look after yourself. We'll talk soon.
Lovely. Thank you very much, James. Thank you for having me on.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. Daryl is a mine of information. Check out his own radio show on his station. And if you go to the website, jamesworldradio.co.uk, we will put all the details of where you can hear Daryl play his music, won't we?
Certainly will, yeah. Definitely do that.
Yeah. Why don't you and I write a song and do something for Eurovision?
That is quite possible.
Because we could make me sound tuneful.
Auto-tuning.
And I do little dances, so we could do a video. I could do a sort of boom, bang, a bang, boom, bang, a bang, boom, bang, bang, boom.
Is that it? That's the whole song, is it? Just to put that on.
Oh, that's been done, hasn't it?
Mm.
Bang, boom, a bang, boom, bang, boom, bang.
Is that your dog in the background?
No, that's me going boom, bang, a bang, 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 boom, bang, bang, bang. Oh, and people so rude about that video you put up last week, weren't they?
Oh, it's a brilliant video.
It's still there. People want to go and have a look at it.
It's a bit naughty.
It's not a bit naughty, mate. It's very, very naughty. There is nudity on it.
Is there? I'll have to look again. Well,
yeah, you know full well there's nudity on it. What's it called?
Edelweiss, bring me Edelweiss.
Yeah. I remember when the producer of my TV show back in the 90s said we should put it on, and he had to check out that it was acceptable.
That would have been 1 o'clock in the morning. That would have been all right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit tame now, isn't it?
Well, you've got Babe Station now, haven't you?
I don't know. What's that?
I don't know either. I've just been told about it by a friend.
Really?
Yeah.
Babe Station. That doesn't sound very politically correct to me. What is that?
I don't know. I'll check it out later. See what I'll give you a report.
No, you obviously seem to know a lot about it.
I'll take a picture with my phone and I'll send you a copy of the picture.
Right, okay. Babe Station, yeah, not one I've heard of. What sort of music do they play?
Anything you can jiggle to.
Jiggle music?
Yeah.
We actually need some more music. You want to be on the programme? We look for new music. Music that isn't getting played. Music from people who think, every radio programme's got a playlist we can't get on. We will put on some... I'm not going to put on certain sorts of music, but we're genuinely quite... Catholic in our tastes, you know, anything from a bit of heavy metal to a bit of soul. I'm still looking for more reggae. So if you know somebody who wants to be played on the James Whale Radio Show, get in touch, right? Email us, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. Rob will get back in touch with you and we'll sort out for you to get your music on the air here.
I will indeed.
Okay, I think this is time on the programme, jamesworldradio.co.uk. Hello, nice to have you with us if you're enjoying this or if you think this is complete and utter shoops, then there is another 100-odd hours. Take your pick. We're talking about music. There's an interview with Boy George on there. It's quite nice. And his song, from a while back, but it's worth checking out. In the meantime, Robbo, of course, this is his special part of the programme. It's called Tech Talk.
You build this up so much, and then I depress everybody.
Well, I was hoping that you would take it upon yourself to go out there, sell a bit of advertising, get yourself some sponsorship for Tech Talk, but my golly, it seems to be taking forever. You know, it could be, ladies and gentlemen, now, Rob with Tech Talk, brought to you by Bose International.
The speaker, people?
I don't know, I just made the name up.
Okay. Right, last week I complained about iOS 9, didn't I?
Yeah, explain what that is, because I told Mrs. W about that. She said, I was just thinking about downloading that. I said, don't.
Yeah, iOS 9 is the software update that Apple have brought out for all their products, all their current products.
So whether you're on an iPad, an iPhone, an iMac, a MacBook or whatever.
Yeah, it's the software that makes them all talk to each other, brings new features. Well, iOS 9 wrecked my life last week. Now they've brought out iOS 9.01.
That can wreck the rest of your life.
I haven't dared install it yet, but I might give it a go. After I've backed up everything, I suppose.
You're a glutton for punishment, aren't you?
So I'll get back to everyone on that, whether it's safe or not. The other thing I wanted to talk about this week is memes. You know what memes are, do you?
Memes?
Memes. Yeah, them stupid social media things, which is like a photograph.
No idea.
It's basically a photograph with some writing over it.
No idea.
Like slogans or statements that people put on their walls and their Twitter feeds and stuff to, like a point of the day or that the mood I'm feeling at the moment. It's just like a cartoon or, you know.
Oh, Jimmy, I thought they were called something else. Those little faces and things. They were called.
That's emojis you're thinking of.
A what?
Emojis.
Oh, emojis.
Yeah.
Emojis.
Yeah. It's not
like images, but emojis.
Emotions.
Do you know there's a whale that I quite often use there?
Yeah, well, they put that in iOS, especially for you.
Oh, right, thanks.
So these memes, I'm getting sick of them. Every time I go to Facebook, everyone's posting memes. Instead of saying I'm not very happy today, they'll go on the internet, they'll search out the right meme for that particular mood they're in, upload it and then stick it on your Facebook wall. So your wall's flooded with cartoons and bits of writing over the top and the text is all horrible and it's just a mess. So I've decided I'm going to fight back and make up my own memes, which make no sense whatsoever.
Oh, good. Can we use them then next week or can we sell them? People could buy them off us.
Yeah, I'll do something. So I'll put loads of memes and I'll put them on the Facebook page that just mean absolutely nothing. When you read them, you'll spend 10 minutes trying to work out what's the meaning behind this meme.
And there is no meaning at all.
No, none at all.
I think that's a very good idea. A very good idea indeed. Okay. The other thing is, of course, some people complain that we drop them off our Facebook page. I had a complaint this week from... So, you know, suddenly drop me. But we don't, do we?
Well, I don't. I'm not that mean.
No. I mean, you know, generally, we just encourage more... Because somebody said to me, we get to 5,000 or so, and then it gets clogged up, doesn't it?
Yeah, you can only have 5,000 friends on Facebook.
But apparently you can have loads more if you want.
You can have loads more, and you can have a like page, but they don't get your posts because of Facebook's advertising policy. Then you start having to pay. So we don't want to pay. So
right. So the reason I do it like that is so that new people get a chance to come on. So if you don't use it very often, if you don't take part in discussions, you don't sort of have your say, then I'm not being rude, but then we just knock a few off so that other people can come on.
And then you can always add yourself as a friend again.
Yeah, and please do. Please do. We do love to see you. We do love to have... somebody was getting very upset, rang me, a friend of mine, and I said, look, I'm just doing it on Facebook. I just wanted to talk about what you just said. I said, yeah, but not ring me at home while I'm in bed. I was just doing it online. Just annoying, isn't it, really?
I've given up trying. You never respond to any of my posts on Facebook.
Well, why? I talk to you every week. Why would I... You see, that's another stupid thing as well. Anyway, right, thank you for that. Tour de France, you know, do you remember, was it last year, before? No, last year. Everybody got excited. It came through Yorkshire. It went down into Essex and into London. And everybody was excited about the Tour de France.
What?
Yeah. Next year, I think it was next year, yeah, they given the start, the grand départ. The beginning of the Tour de France had been won by London. But now Boris has said no. Boris Johnson has said, look, we won it, we bid for it, but we decided it's going to cost us too much money, and we don't want it, which was a bit rude. It was, to be quite honest, it was a bit rude to the French, wasn't it?
It's the Tour of France, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but it starts in different places, and to be fair, we're doing really well. We've won it a few times now.
I'm not surprised if we're doing it in Britain.
Well, we only do part of it. It started, you know, it was going to start in London, but apparently it started in Yorkshire, and apparently up in Yorkshire they've lost an enormous amount of money, so they didn't want to do it again. You know, London had won it, they bid for it, they won it, and now Boris, the mayor of London's decided he doesn't want it. And so something we're talking about on Facebook. And so some of your thoughts. Gez Morrill said, can't ride a push bike in London. And Mr. Johnson knows that. Yeah, but it's not, the fact is, it would have possibly brought loads of people to the capital for the start. Stephen Westwood said he backed out of the deal. He should have done his homework before he tendered for the tour in the first place. And for a city trying to be more cyclist-friendly, it's missed an opportunity to encourage cycling to the masses. Don't get me wrong. I think keep push bikes off the road. That's what I want. Karen Bowman said, I don't really care, honest James. Wayne Seaton said, it's the Tour de France, not the Tour of Northern Europe. Mark, well, it's the same. That's like going back to Eurovision Song Contest. Since when was Israel and Australia in Europe?
Was Australia in last year?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Blimey.
Mark O'Neill says, absolutely the right decision. It will also mean that the people of London can get about their business. I agree. I don't want to see more. I mean, cyclists in London, I'm sorry, guys, but if you cycle in London, it's a nightmare. They cycle so fast, they don't, and they don't realise that cars and lorries and buses have a lot to put up with driving in London without people on their bikes. Anyway, that's another story. The fact is that the Mayor Johnson tendered for this and won it. It's like winning the Olympics. He won it. And now he's gone back, so we don't want it anymore. We can't afford it. We don't want it anymore. Makes us look a bit silly, doesn't it? Steve Evans says the clue is in the name, Tour de France. Valerie Johnson said, fed up with the roads being closed all the time. Fed up with how the riders jump red lights. Fed up. Fed up. Fed up. They should pay road tax, get insurance, the same as motorists. Oh, I do tend to agree with you, Valerie. I do so tend to agree with you. But there we are. He shouldn't really have tendered for it in the first place, should he? No, he shouldn't. Am I talking to myself again?
No, I'm still here.
Are you still there? We've got a listener. The listener's still here. Oh, good. Hi, listener. Hello. Hello. James Whale Radio Show, coming out of your favourite radio station and from your favourite iPhone, computer and everything else. I think we're almost at the time for the questions, aren't we?
Okay, let's do some questions. I'll try not to mess them up this week.
No, that'll be fun. Let's see if you can. Go on.
Mark Swain. Why do some...
Mark Swain. God, there's a name to conjure with. Mark Swain.
Why?
Sorry, go on.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
Why do some motorway cameras appear to be pointing towards adjacent houses?
I've never noticed that, and I don't know why you would. When you're driving on a motorway, Mark, I suggest you keep your eyes on the road. Driving at 70 miles an hour on a motorway should not give you the time to notice where any camera is pointing.
He could be a passenger in a car.
Even so.
Okay.
Even so, keep your eyes on the road, Mark. Don't start looking around and being clever about, I don't know, many houses near motorways either.
Isn't there one in Yorkshire somewhere that's like a farm in the middle of the motorway?
That's on the M62, yeah.
Mm.
But, you know, people drive past there so quickly. Why would the speed cameras be pointing at the house? Mark, that's a ridiculous question.
In case the house moves?
Move on to the next one.
Okay. Jane Johnson. Why is tumble dryer fluff pink?
I've often wondered that, really, because the fluff in my belly button is often grey or white. And I don't know. I mean, I presume that you have a lot of pink clothes that you put in your tumble dryer.
Mark Moody. Have the French already bought the water on Mars?
That is a very, very good question, and we're not sure of the answer. We're not sure if anybody's bought anything on Mars, and the reason being, nobody can find out who actually owns Mars, and when they do, then who knows?
Maybe the French do own it.
I don't think any of us own Mars.
I'm sure when we get there and open the filing cabinet marked Deeds, we'll find out.
What a ridiculous thing to say. Anyway, carrying on.
Craig Birchall, is that right? Have I got that right?
Yeah, nearly. Go on.
Okay. Why do people refer to Frankenstein's monster as Frankenstein?
Because he named it after himself, didn't he? That's actually a very good question, because I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I thought you did the film.
Well, I did in another life. I produced, of course, and directed Frankenstein. Yeah, I'm credited on the film credits for it. But they call it Frankenstein because it is Frankenstein's monster. Frankenstein made it, so then they call it Frankenstein.
I'm glad we cleared that one up.
I think so.
Dave Nealon. I hope I got that right. Okay. Are Doctor and the Medics real medics?
No.
Okay. Andy...
Actually, I think they might have been. Were they not junior doctors who decided to start a band?
I'll find out for next week.
Yeah, I think they might have been. Go on.
Andy Matty. Is Sherlock Holmes really a girl?
No.
It's fictional, isn't it?
Yeah. She's not a girl either. That's a stupid question from somebody who's probably on medication.
You can't say that, can you?
Yeah, I just did. Somebody is on medication and the nurse will be in a moment and take the tablets.
Jane Hall. Why, when we read telephone numbers back, do we always start with a O, as in the letter, and not zero?
Well, some of us do start with zero, and I try myself to start numbers with zero, like our call-in number 0117-230-1771.
That sounded really good. We should say it that way in future.
Yeah. So you should, why do people, when you ring them, answer the phone with their number? Hello, 2277?
Really?
Why do they do that?
Most people don't even know their phone number anymore.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Is it?
I've got one from Mark Curry, if we could squeeze it in.
Mark Curry, the former Blue Peter presenter?
It could be him.
Yeah. Didn't we have Mark on the show not long ago?
No, we didn't. I asked if you could get Mark Curry on the show.
Oh, I could get Mark Curry on the show. Shall I get Mark Curry on the show?
Get Mark Curry on the show.
Well, why don't you get back in touch with Mark Curry then and see if it is the Mark Curry?
Can I read his question?
Oh, yes, sorry. Yes, carry on, yes.
Is Robert Plant about to sneeze during the instrumental break and the fade-out of Whole Lot of Love?
Yeah, I wondered that, and I think, yes, Mark, you probably have a point. I think he did have to stifle a nose fart, yeah.
A nose fart. I'll make a note of that one.
Yeah, sneeze, nose fart. Haven't you heard that expression before?
That's going down in my... at least for now on paper, and then it'll get stored later.
Yeah. Good. Right, I'm going to the pub now because the sun is shining, the sky is blue, and it may not last much longer.
How's your Mr. Universe going?
Oh, look at that. Can you see that?
Sadly not.
I've got muscles.
Oh, yes.
I didn't even know muscles existed anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure you could call that a muscle, but there we go.
Really? Just have a little feel of that, mate. Yeah, that's a muscle.
Okay.
Good. Right. Well, listen, join us again for the next edition of the James Whale Radio Show. And in the meantime, check out some of the other shows. And, well, why not spend some time browsing around our shop? Lots of goodies there for you to buy. And Christmas is not far away.
Well, I think that's it then. We should pack everything up and go.
How do I close this down? Just shut the top? Or do
just
I
close the lid. Yeah.
What?
Just close the lid.
close the lid. Okay. Good. I've closed the lid.
That's it. Let's go.
Listening to the James Whale Radio Show. For more information, visit www.jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Why not check us out on facebook.com/James Whale Radio Show or follow James on Twitter at the James Whale. James Whale, the voice of reason.